to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. This is Susan Franzen of Ames, co-host today with
Paul Wearson of Story City, and we're the county reporters inviting you to join us for a road trip to the surrounding area.
This was a trip we started as Paul drove down from Story City to pick me up at my home in West Ames. While I'm getting my field recorder ready, Paul, why don't you describe the car you'll be driving for our road trip?
Well, it's my trusty 1996 Buick Deluxe Park Avenue with all the push buttons and along with a great sound system. It's a beautiful car, a heavy car, and I'll hate to get rid of it on the day it dies.
Paul and I are just pulling out on Ontario Road, which is a little strip of the old Lincoln Highway. We'll dip down to New Highway 30, Lincoln Way, and we're heading west. We're listening to a little cool jazz on radio station KHOI 89.1 FM, and there's a train going by as we drive along. Did you hear that, Paul?
Yeah, I hear the train in the distance.
Of course, this is the theme of the day because we're going to
The Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. We're going there now. It's not even, it's the off season. What are we doing going to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway this time of year?
We're really going to the new James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center, which is located at the railway station for the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. This is actually a good time for our program because there won't be crowds and the museum director can show us around easily. The real reason for this trip today is to visit James H. Andrew himself. He lives in Jefferson and he's in his 90s. Debbie Bunka, another KHOI reporter, recently interviewed him and was enthralled, but she warned me that we shouldn't wait.
Well, okay, now we're on the way to Boone, and a lively downtown business district, and west of there is the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway.
And that's where the museum is. Well, here we are.
Come and ride the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. Turn back them old hands of time. See the beautiful Des Moines River Valley on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
The new museum certainly is a handsome building, and it fits well with the old depot. You sure can tell you're in a railway yard. There's a caboose I rode a few years ago with my friend Denny Lindemann, who's a volunteer fireman on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
Oh, yes, volunteers. Without volunteers, what would we do in small towns? I hear the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway is well-staffed with volunteers, as well as that great museum we're going to talk about today.
Well, we have an appointment with Mike Wendell, the new director, so I'm sure he can tell us about it. But speaking of small towns, Mike was the director of the Bishop Hill Heritage Association in Illinois before he came here. Bishop Hill is a population of only 125, but as he described it, it's the Ellis Island of Swedish immigration, with the archives for all the Swedish immigrants in the U.S. I believe he said they had over 100,000 visitors a year. So a small town can have a big attraction, and I think that's one of the things we could anticipate right here in Boone.
Paul Wearson here at the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center in Boone, Iowa, near the Boone Scenic Valley Railway. And we're talking today with its director, Mike Wendell. Mike, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having
me. It's a beautiful facility here. I just did a walkthrough. We're going to get more of a tour later. It's a very new facility. When was this put up?
It was opened Memorial Day weekend, and then in June we had the official opening of
last
year.
Grand opening.
Yeah. It's brand new. We've got a library here with about 900 books so far, and they're all railroad books or railroad-related books. Many, many books. I would say the library has grown since last May by about a third.
Really?
And this is at the way this library is growing right now, I'd have to say right now it is one of the best railroad libraries in the whole Midwest, maybe the country after some years.
And this is a work in progress.
It is.
You're going to be adding to this library.
We will.
And there are going to be some probably donations in terms of books and physical things
right.
for the library.
Right. And we've had a lot of donations of books already. And then what we usually say to folks is if we have a copy already of the book, because we're always in need of funds to purchase other books, can we sell the copy that you donated? And they don't have a problem with that. So then that's what we do. And then we have a book fund so that we can purchase other books too.
Now, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, that has a defined season, doesn't it? That the trains run?
Yeah, yeah.
What is the season?
Well, they start in May and they run all the way to December. And that's during our Christmas season. And all that, it's on the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad site. Mm-hmm. It's got a whole listing. There's a whole calendar on there of events.
And so that runs in season. Mm-hmm. But your museum here is open year-round.
Yeah, we're open year-round. We're not open on Sundays during the off-season, but we are Monday through Saturday.
What are your hours here at the museum?
10 to 4.
10 to 4. Mm-hmm. So anyone can drive here to Boone, Iowa, and near the depot for the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway.
Right.
Is this facility constructed just this year?
Right.
What's your number one thing on your job here? What do you enjoy the most?
Oh, the people. This time of year, the people visitation slows down a little bit, but that's where a lot of the research is going on right now. And we have an exhibit called Depots of Iowa opening May 1st. And so I'm in the process right now of getting the rights to use photos for banner design. I'm doing a lot of graphic arts banner design work, as well as an interactive piece on depots.
Is that right?
So that's going to be, there's more than 1,000 depots in Iowa at one time. And for the beginning of this, we won't have 1,000, but we'll have a representative amount for the beginning of this exhibit, and we'll add to it as time goes on.
So in the museum business, there's always something going on. And always something you're developing, always something you're working on. Mm-hmm. I suppose a lot of people think that there's so much downtime in a museum, but that's not true at all.
Never. In this time of the season, you're working on grants, you're working on exhibits, and you're looking to the future for the next season and things like that. So there's never any time that's where we're cataloging. We're right now, we've got some special software called Past Perfect, and we have about 5,000 items that we hope to put into it. And then we've got, like tomorrow, we'll have 4 volunteers come in the morning, and we have 4 computers set up in a network, and then that software resides on all those 4 computers, and so they can catalog, and we take pictures of the items, and every one of these books in here will eventually be in that collection.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, speaking of volunteers, how many folks are involved here?
We had a thank you dinner for volunteers not all that long ago, and there was, I think we had 170 that were at that dinner.
Really?
Yeah. We have a regular core or a stable of volunteers that we rely on regularly, but for special events, there's a whole outside ring of folks that just come for those special events because we need so many people to help run that.
So there are that many people fascinated by railroads and working here and helping out in any way that they can. What's the immediate future here? Do you have some of the goals you hope to achieve in the next year or so?
Okay, that's a good question. I'm really excited about this. Before, just like with World War II veterans, we want to get to a lot of these folks who worked for the railroad before they're no longer around. And so I've begun recording people, and I've got, about 4 or 5 interviews so far and hope to get some more. Getting those life experiences of people who work for the railroads, whatever railroad it might have been in Iowa, or anywhere else for that matter in the nation, and really trying to give the younger folks an idea of what it was like, you know, to be gone for like 3 or 4 days on a run, or working in a control tower or whatever it might be, or working as a station agent in a depot. So the real life experiences is
that really is an immediacy question, because these people are dying, and so you have that era, the golden era of railroads, where people now in their 90s and 80s and maybe 70s would have some vivid hands-on memories of that period.
Right.
And how you're reaching out to find these folks anyway.
Yeah, can. I mean, we love donations, but as much as important as a physical donation is those stories. And what the stories are golden. I mean, they're really important. There's no other way to give people an idea. I mean, you can do it with pictures and you can do it with objects, and that's all important too, but it's just the real-life personal stuff that means so much to me. I had a person last week who was a railroad post office worker who ran the Chicago to Council Bluffs run. And
they were sorting mail in the cars.
In the cars. And so he'd tell me when they'd get into towards Chicago, they'd see the skyline looming up, you know, and if there was a turn, they'd be able to look out a little bit. And they knew that they were almost there. And there was a lot of pressure to get all these things sorted to where they're supposed to be, because there'd be a whole fleet of trucks waiting downtown to take the mail to other lines, because that would be the way they'd get these a lot of the stuff up north, say if they had to get to a northern suburb or wherever.
I've worked all my life on the railroad, on Chicago and northwestern lines. For nearly 20 years I've been an engineer, just riding those rails for life. Sometimes my wife thinks I'm crazy for loving that old railroad job of mine. Says I stay home by the phone, I just a-waiting to be gone, off riding those rails for life, riding the rails, over the high bridge we go, riding the rails, just a feeling in my soul that makes me lose control every time I hear that train whistle blow.
What's the trail that got you to Boone here in the first place?
Well, a buddy of mine told me about this guy who was going out to Boone, Iowa, who's a volunteer steam engine operator. And they introduced me to him, and he stopped by the museum a few times and just visited me there in Bishop Hill. I said, well, yeah, I've been a volunteer conductor out at the Old Threshers Reunion in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, on the trolleys. And he said, well, why don't you come out with me some weekend and you can volunteer as a conductor on the steam train and stuff on that, and you can be a conductor. I said, well, that sounds great, you know. I needed to get away from work and figured that'd be a nice getaway. So, well, I did it, and I loved it. And it just happened to be that the weekend I went out, it was right when they broke ground for this museum. So I happened to be here for the breaking of the ground of the museum, and it was a lot of excitement about that. They had the golden shovels and everything. So it was a really strange, unusual coincidence that I happened to be here for the breaking of the ground, and then a year later, here I am. So I knew the museum was being built. And then he brought up to me, he said, well, they're looking for a director. And I said, oh, really? And I said, well, and at the time I thought, well, I'm real happy with my job here. I wasn't really looking for a job at all. And he said, maybe you want to come out and take a look at it. Well, I did come out and look at it, and I fell in love with the building. By that time it was built. Basically, just fell in love with the challenge of getting this museum together for its opening. And there was, of course, I was in the middle of a lot of things back in my town there, but I couldn't seem to resist the challenge and the idea of being a part of a brand new railroad museum. It was very exciting and a beautiful building. And so that's kind of how it all started.
It was called fate, Mike.
I think
fate.
So, yep. I've always chased trains. I've chased the Milwaukee Road 261. Both my girls had been on that. It's a big Milwaukee engine, northern as they called it, a 484 configuration. Anytime there was an engine that would come into the city of Chicago, a vintage engine, I was always there taking pictures. So it's been a passion of mine for years.
In other words, you're home.
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
After the interview in the library, Mike took us out into the huge museum space. What was your impression of this museum, Paul?
Oh, it's a nice big area. I can't believe they did it in 1 year, total construction time. And this is a beautiful space with all kinds of hand cars and railroad relics and a cute little station house with a working telegraph and all the artifacts that go with that little it looks like a step back into the 1800s. It's a beautiful thing. And the stuff on the walls and all the flags and insignia. And if you're a railroad buff, this is the place to go. And it's so big and spacious and plenty of room for a lot of people to walk around. You're not crowded in. I love the setup.
I wanted to take a picture of the little Jefferson Station that I knew had been part of James H. Andrews' collection. And Mike was eager to show it to us.
Yeah, I'll have you guys go in there. I think you'll find it really interesting.
So is this what was on this property?
Yeah. So what they did was they built the museum. They brought this in, and they set it in concrete, and then they built the museum around it.
Is that right?
Yep. They built the museum around it, and this is his semaphore. We had to cut that down because it's too tall to be inside the building.
You had a semaphore?
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, he was really into it, and he still is into it.
Thank you.
See, I grew up in the country, and we had a party line. Our ring was one long and four short.
Is that right?
And all the women listened. Right, it was called rubbering.
Yeah.
There was no private call.
That's what they always told me in a nearby town. They had an operator there, and like you said, they always told me that if you didn't hear, if the volume wasn't very loud, that meant a lot of people were on there listening.
And so,
remember that.
My aunt called from Minneapolis. She said, "Thelma, are you there?" She's calling my mom. "Yes." "Emma, are you there?" "Yes." And then there's a Danish couple across the road from us. She says, "Cora, are you there?" "No, this is Hans."
That's hilarious.
And so she had some news for mom, you know, and she knew that everyone was on the line, so.
Yeah, this is a neat little building. I always said that if I died and went to train heaven, it'd be... And one of the things about the depots of Iowa is just how central all this communication stuff was in those days, you know. You know, you'd hear about... Say Uncle Charlie passed away, but he was out east and he's coming in on the train. You know, they're going to bring his body on the train and that sort of thing, you know. Or the latest weather report. Yeah. Or the station agent was always privy to anything that was happening with town, you know. Yeah. Especially if it was outside, say if a president was going to come through your town on the way somewhere. The station agent was the first person to hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
But I was able to get from the Boone County Historical City. There's a picture a block away from here of William McKinley before he was assassinated. He was here in Boone. And Teddy Roosevelt, when he was running for the second time for election, he was in Boone too. So that was it. I mean, Roosevelt passed through this way. Everybody did.
Yeah.
Now, it must be fun for you to actually know and work with the man whose name is borne by this museum.
It is. In fact, we're going to get together this next Wednesday of next week, and he's just a neat guy. And when he tells you a story, he's there to teach you, you know, and that's the neat thing about it. And he's been through so much himself. He's got a lot of neat stories, and he's a lot of life experience stories.
And James Andrew, for whom this is named, he's donated so many things and helped do a lot of seed money to get things going.
He did.
It's like being present at creation for you.
Yeah, pretty much. We're just so grateful to have someone like him because he's one of the people that ended up helping make this all possible. And we've got other corporate donors as well, which we're very thankful for. But the neat thing about Jim is that he brings such an excitement to all this. And we're continuing it with... Oh, things like we've got our speaker series. We've had two speakers already this year, and then we have one more speaker, Dick Steffen, about Jewell Junction and the railroad. So,
right, Jewell is up in Hamilton County, and you know the railway really is the story of the United States because of the vast distances in the United States and how the West was settled. It was not possible, really, until you look at what the Transcontinental Railway did.
Right, right. We've been, Iowa, from what I've learned since I got out here, that you could take and go in any direction in, say, 1905, for example, and take like a, you know, directional compass and go 11 miles in any direction and hit rails. You can go 13 miles in any direction and hit a depot. So it's...
Oh, I'm sure.
There's just no way that Iowa would have been what it is today without the rails. And it was more than a lot of states because everybody was headed to Council Bluffs, you know, for the start of the Transcontinental Railroad. So, you know, you had, just a lot of lines going horizontally across the state. And, you know, whether it be the Illinois Central or the Chicago Northwestern or Milwaukee Road or the Santa Fe, which would be in the southeast corner by Burlington Way there, Keokuk. Somewhere on the order, there was more than 1,000 depots that were built in this state.
Is that right?
Yeah, there really were. And somewhere on the order of over $1 billion in investment to build all this in those early days. And so just realizing how much money was put into the state at the beginning. You know, before the Lincoln Highway, there was literally no other way to get around this state without either interurban service, whether it be the Fort Dodge, Des Moines, and Southern, or whether it be the WCFN, the Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and Northern, east of here. Those were two very efficient ways to get yourself from one city to another. And then, of course, the major rail lines at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mother was born in 1906. She spoke of the interurban train You could pay a dime and get to Ames from Story City or up to Webster City.
It's really
or
efficient.
To Des Moines. And that really was prior to the interstate highway system or even the 30s when you had a lot of pavement going on.
Right.
Boy, that was the only way to get around and the only efficient way.
It really was. So you could do your grocery shopping in another town and then you could, in fact, I read somewhere that you can be in any part of this state, in any of the smallest corners, whether it be north, south, east, or west, and still, if you were a farmer, you were still able to get your grain to market somehow, you know.
Yeah, it was a marvelous time, and so different from the present, that this is where a museum comes in.
Right.
You have to inform people about something that's beyond their ken and their experience. And see, I'm 70, so I go back to understanding a lot of this and remembering the tail end of the rail passenger era. But a lot of that's new to me when my mother told me those stories about the interurban. And then there are people far more removed, younger than I, who have trouble even understanding this ever existed.
Right.
And this is the role of a museum, to make sure that people have the ability to acquire knowledge about something that precedes them by decades and decades.
Right, I appreciate you defining it that way because a lot of people don't understand that. And it's so important to, I mean, they always say if you're going to march ahead in the future, you really have to know where you've come from.
Here on KHOI today, our guest has been Mike Wendell, director of the museum here at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. It's the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center, newly constructed in 2012. Mike, a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, same here.
Best of luck in the future, and that 15,000 figure will probably quadruple in no time at all.
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City and surrounding area. Today's program is a road trip with county reporters Paul Wearson and Susan Franson, and we've been visiting the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. It's a beautiful 9,000-square-foot facility featuring a research library, theater, and displays featuring memorabilia from all eras of railroading in Iowa. Right now, we're on our way to Jefferson to visit with James H. Andrew himself.
Next month is my vacation, September and old puffer belly days. Gonna join that celebration with people from nearly every state. Take a ride on 1385 and feel them old-fashioned railroad ways. Steam until tomorrow with dreams from yesterday. Steam until tomorrow. Better get on board, haul aboard, for this train pulls away. I said you better get on board, haul aboard, for this train pulls away.
Paul Wearson today with KHOI, and we are located in Jefferson, Iowa, at the beautiful home of a local celebrity, James H. Andrew. He's affiliated with the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center, Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad in Boone, and we're right here in James' home, built in 1949 on the edge of a nice wooded gully, and we have bird feeders and all kinds of things to look out through the picture window to see. And James, thank you for welcoming us into your home.
You bet. Well, it's nice to have you here, and it's an interesting situation to recall how it all got started on the railroad business and the fact that I had a grandfather that did a lot of traveling by rail in the early days. So in 1901, why, he took an immigrant car, which is a box car that you could put your horses and your cattle and hogs and chickens and even the family dog and your furniture and your farm implements and your seed and so forth, and make a trip rather than going by covered wagon. So I heard a lot of stories from him in the early days when I was a child about his experiences, and of course that got me kind of fired up on traveling and railroading. One of the amusing things was that when he would be riding on these freight trains with this immigrant car, why, the train crews were not too friendly, maybe, to helping him, because he would need water for his livestock, you see. And, of course, if they parked the train way off from where the hydrant was at, why, that was kind of an inconvenience. But he quickly found out that if he would take the excess eggs that his chickens were laying and gave them to the train crew who lived in the caboose, then they could have fresh fried eggs, and immediately they were his buddies on finding a good spot for him to take care of whatever his needs were. So that was the type of thing that that grew out of it. But that was my initial deal of being interested in railroading. And my father was a cattle feeder, and he would ship to Chicago probably 4 to 5 carloads at least a year of livestock.
They'd go by railroad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And frequently, why, he might send 2 cars, and you were entitled to a free ticket for one person for every car that you shipped. And as a result, why, if he shipped 2 cars, why, he had means of himself getting there, but he could take me along. And of course, that was quite an experience as a young boy to get to go to Chicago and see the sights. And so you would ride in on the caboose going in, and of course it was a slow freight train, and it was a nighttime deal mostly. And then coming back, you could come back at your convenience after staying in Chicago 2 or 3 days, and come back on a coach situation.
That's a great thing. Now, James, date that for me. What era was that?
Well, that would be in about the area of 1938, 39.
Prior to the war.
Uh-huh.
That all was birthing of your interest in the railroads, and that led to your collections. You began to collect railroad stuff.
Yes.
So how did that begin, and when, James?
Well, I started out because I was kind of retiring from farming in about 1980, and I decided I needed a new hobby in my older years. And by golly, that was a time when the Rock Island and the Milwaukee went into bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they had big sales as a result of closing out business.
Oh, sure.
And I kind of hit on the idea, by gosh, maybe I ought to take up collecting railroad items.
So you went to the auctions.
Yes,
bought
material. Went to the auctions.
What sort of things did you pick up initially?
Well, at the first sale that I went to was in September of 1980. And at that sale, I bought 2 motor cars, you know, the little putt-putt outfits.
Sure.
And that was kind of amusing because they had 35 of them for sale. And, of course, they'd been used and abused because they were going into bankruptcy, and so they didn't have money to spend. But I thought, well, if I buy 2, I can make one run out of 2 of them, probably by interchanging parts. And so I purchased 2 at $35 a piece at that time. And, of course, they had been selling higher than that, but I waited till they got down to about the 6th or 7th to come up. And by that time, well, the hot purchasers were out of the way, and I could buy them for next to nothing. And so that started me off with that, and they bought a baggage cart and a few smaller things of that nature. And, of course, didn't know much about what I was doing, and so to speak. But I took off from that point, and I started to go on a yearly basis to the Kane County Chicago Railroad Show, which is a big weekend affair. And they would have maybe 600 banquet tables with railroad items of every kind.
Oh, it was like a kid in a candy store.
Right.
And the stuff was everywhere.
Yeah.
And then, was that an annual event?
Well, quite often, if I could get away. It was the second weekend in June. I think I went 14 times at least there, and then I took in a lot of other railroad shows and auctions in Kansas City and in Florida. And
so you were accumulating all this equipment. Where were you putting it?
Well, I tell you, I, of course, had the barn that you have noticed here in the back of the lot, and, of course, got a good big basement, and, of course, farm buildings because we were farming, and so I could put things at the farm and work on them there in the wintertime because we had a heated shop. And so it worked out real well that way. But eventually, why, I got enough things together that I decided that I would build a typical small rural depot. And there is the depot now is in the museum building at Boone. They moved it over and put it in before the building was completed.
Now, yes, how did you marry up with the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway then? When did that occur?
Well, it was one of those situations, as I say, I went to this bankruptcy sale in 1980, and I think the Boone and Scenic Valley got started maybe about 83, something like that. So we were right at the same stage, so to speak. And through the years, why, I would go over there and ride the train occasionally and, of course, observe how they were getting along. And I could see that they were a good outfit and were expanding and were preserving a lot of railroad history. And so it became an attraction to me to see what they had gotten done. And, of course, my collecting days kind of came to an end after about 20 years. I got up to about 2,000, and at that time, why, my wife had a lot of disabilities. She lost her eyesight to quite a degree, and then she had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And so the next 10 years were pretty much devoted to
her
looking
care.
After her
sure.
care and so on. And as a result, why, I occasionally would buy something by mail because I would get some people are in the business would send out a collection, you know, on a newsletter every so often.
So then at what point did you locate the collection over to the site in Boone then?
Well, we started moving it over. It would be back in 2011, and that's when the building was under construction over there. You see the museum building. And, of course, they had to move this little depot here from here.
That was quite a project.
Huh? Yeah. Well, I had it back there under those big oak trees. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was an ideal situation for it. And the caboose was also adjacent to it and so on, just like a little village, so to speak. And so I had put all that in there, which was real nice as far as the trees were concerned, but it took a real clever house mover to get it out of the trees.
Oh, it was right amongst the trees.
Oh, yeah,
bring it
had
out
to
of
be
there.
Really zigged and zagged to get it out of there. But they successfully removed it and got it over to Boone and got it inside before the west wall went up, of course, on the big building.
Now, you got that moved over there, and then the building was finished, and so everything fit into that building over at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway.
Well, there's quite a few things that they think they have stored over there even yet in boxcars and some of their buildings. And I think probably currently that they have, maybe about 50 or 60% of my collection on display.
Oh.
But there's still a lot of it to be processed.
Is that stored on site?
Yes.
So everything is over there,
everything
and they
over.
Decide what to exhibit and when
yeah.
to put that in and everything.
So it gives them something to do, like in these winter months, you know, when they aren't running trains, why they can be developing displays and getting things together.
Is there a full-time curator at that museum?
Yes, yes. Yes, and we have a young man by the name of Mike Wendell, and he's doing a real great job, and it's one of those things that it's going to keep him busy for a while to get it all done. But
now, did they build that facility for your collection, or were they contemplating that building anyway?
I'm under the impression that the Graybaugh Construction Company over at Boone, apparently a fair long-sighted outfit, were probably not too busy because, you know, we've had a kind of a decline in construction activities. And they knew that the Boone and Scenic Valley needed to build a museum building. So I think on their own, just feeling that it might work out, and to keep their employees busy, they put them to work drafting a plan for a building and using a lot of new modern construction methods, you know, for insulation and so forth. And then presented that to Boone and Scenic Valley. Here's something that we can do, and it'd be kind of good for us because we haven't got much going on. And the
that was really great because they kept their employees involved.
Oh, you bet.
And they did something creative for the community. And now you had all the stuff that they could put in the museum. It worked out beautifully.
Yes, well, I made a nice financial contribution to them towards the building. I was in a position to do that, and I've always had a great interest in history, and I thought, boy, this is a rare opportunity for Iowa, because here's this nice little scenic railroad that entertains so many people, and the museum would just tie in with it wonderfully, because when people are waiting for the train to take off, they could be browsing through the museum, you see, and
it's a great idea, and it really took off, didn't it?
Well, I was really pleased in this sense that it's a wonderful family opportunity, because particularly between grandparents and grandchildren, because you can see how they can enjoy doing something together. The kids ride the train. That's something new and different. And the grandparents have probably got some tales to tell about their travels on the railroad. So wonderful opportunity that way. And I think you can see that the activities they have over there, like this Thomas the Tank, you know, that brings in all the little youngsters.
Oh, the Thomas the Tank. Yes, that show. I see that once in a while.
Yes, well, that just gets
that's a great thing.
Oh, they have a terrific crowd of people there for 2 weekends in September. And I've been over there when parking is taken up for 3 or 4 blocks around the depot.
Wow.
And as you drive around, if you observe the out-of-state license plates, you'd just be amazed at the people that have come from Illinois and Minnesota and Missouri and so forth.
That must be the most rewarding thing, to see that parking lot and see all those plates from other out-of-state. You know?
Well, it is a source of enjoyment, because I really go for things that bring the families together. And, of course, the historical importance of it is one of the things that is so meaningful, because in the long run, if you make any serious study of what made Iowa what it is today, it was the railroads. Right. Because without the railroads, how would we have ever gotten all the machinery here and the cook stoves and the lumber and the concrete and so forth to build our towns and our homes? And then on the other hand, if we hadn't had the railroads to take the grain and the hogs and the cattle to market, how would we have gotten rid of what we were growing here? So if you take a look at, we'll say, the census of 1870 to 1880, which would be when the Transcontinental Railroad came through, why, my gosh, most of the counties probably almost gained threefold in 10 years in their population.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the people that didn't come until there was a railroad, and then they could get here so conveniently. And in my own family and in my wife's family, why, we each had illustrations of people that came out here ahead of that, saw the land, liked the looks of it, and maybe even bought some, but didn't move here until they could get here by train and their family could come quite conveniently that way.
And so what's really different between the experience in Europe and the experience here in the continental United States is that the railroad was the only way to conquer the distance involved. You know, the immense distances.
Yes.
That's what really makes America unique.
Yes, you can see that we did have a little outbreak, you know, building canals, particularly back in Illinois.
Then,
fortunately, the railroads came along, and, of course, that is so much better than the canals, because you take the railroads can operate through the winter and so forth, and the canal is frozen.
Well, James, think of the drudgery of building a canal all across Nebraska.
that would be an evil task.
But I think that your role has been great. You financially, the seed money,
Did you have a lot of input into the design of the museum and that
No, I left that entirely up to them. They, of course, as I say, apparently had architects that looked the situation over, and of course they brought in some new construction efforts that I think probably were a nice way to show off what could be done, you know, improvements on insulation and so forth. But no, I left that up to them, and it was their idea about taking the little depot. I mean, I hadn't envisioned that at all, and of course
that probably is the centerpiece, isn't it?
It should be an interesting thing because, you know, in the situation in all of our towns, we had a depot, and boy, that was the nerve center of the community. That is the place, if you were the local newspaper editor, you ought to have an office down
there, right?
Because you were able to see who was leaving town and who was coming to town and the freight that they were getting in and the telegraph messages that were coming relative to...
Especially
deaths.
During wartime.
Yes.
You know, big events like
oh,
that.
Oh, yes. Yes, so... The railroad just really put things on the map. And then, in addition, why, the wonderful mail service that we had at that time with the railroad post offices, you know.
Well, I think the main thing to remember about Iowa and the United States is the immense and crucial role of the railroads in the development, especially as we moved westward, particularly for states like Iowa and the prairie states, because we're blessed with two rivers on each coast of Iowa. But the movement was west, and so the tale is told by where the railroad went through. And that certainly is true of this area. Boone and this area has always been a railroad town,
oh,
so has
yeah.
Ames. And, you know, it's so wonderful that you had a role like this in preserving this wonderful heritage, James. You've got to feel good about that.
Well, it is one of those things that's kind of unexpected. You know, I'm in my 90s now, and... I have to confess that there was about 15 years I wasn't very busy. And here the last couple of years with the deal moving what I had over to Boone and getting it established and so forth, why I had more excitement than
So late in your life, here comes this big surge of activity,
yeah.
Making sure this museum happened and all your material got in there. And you've been, I think, so generous, not only financially, but you haven't been... hovering over everything, micromanaging what happened. You're trusting the people involved. And look at the outcome. It's been very positive.
Well, it's a wonderful deal. Like I say, this young man, Mike Wendell, is a railroad buff, if you know what I mean.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
And so he's got it in his blood. And so I think it's an exciting thing for him. And, of course, I've been kind of amused because I had many of these things packed up, you see, in boxes. I think we... at one time sent over some 40 great big boxes that wow. were filled with all sorts of things from the dining cars and from the railroad offices and all that type of thing. So it's been kind of like Christmas for him to go through that because he didn't know what he was going to get every time he unwrapped something. Why?
Well, James, I feel so good about that chemistry that's happened. You and this young man working together along with the people over in the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway. It's been delightful to talk to you today, and we are sitting in this beautiful home you've constructed in 1949, overlooking a beautiful wooded area, and James has been so instrumental in making this James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center so very important to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. It's a 9,000-square-foot facility featuring a research library, theater, displays of and memorabilia from all areas of railroading in Iowa, displays of track equipment, toy trains, dining car china, passenger train timetables, lanterns, and even more. So the museum truly does have something to interest everyone of all ages. This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City and surrounding area. Today's program is a road trip with county reporters Paul Wilson and Susan Franson, and we've been visiting the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
What a lovely interview we had with James H. Andrew. That was a neat experience, wasn't it, Paul?
Oh, yes, a delightful man. a community-centered man, a man who gives and really makes sure things happen. And he's got a lovely home right there where the ground falls away. The picture window stares out over a valley of trees. And right down among the grove, you can see where that little station office was that was moved to the museum, and the big red barn here where he stored his material and collection for a long time. Built the place in 1949, and very, very farsighted because it's a beautiful location and a nice scenic place. And on the way over today, you just think that life is a circle, you know, all the way on Highway 30. Right to our right was the Main Line Railway. You look to our left and over by Beaver in that area. On the south and to our left is a wind farm with windmills. And in the 50s when I grew up, I thought windmills were passe. Now they're a major source of energy. So life is a circle. Whatever we thought has had its day somehow returns. And I think that when you look at all the history of the railroad that's portrayed in the museum, it might foreshadow a day when we have those fast trains here in the United States that they have in Europe and Japan. Who knows? Well, it was a great road trip and very informative, and gee, I learned a lot. I met new people. Both Mike and James were delightful, and what they had to say is good for everyone to know, because when I tune in to anything on the radio or television, I'm thrilled if I know now what I didn't know when the program began. I think we've accomplished that.
I think so. But one, I'd look like to put a plug in for more county reporters, because one of the goals of our road trips was to get in touch with the people out in the county. But we can't do that by ourselves. We need to have people out in the county interested in making reports for us.
Sounds like good advice to me, because there are all kinds of folks who can bring their own talent, their own knowledge, and their own background, and all the gifts they bring to our station and for the good of everyone listening. So I think we're going to get some people to do that. I hope and pray that's true.
Message from the county reporters. If you're interested in finding out more about our countywide network, email khoinews, that's khoinews, at gmail.com with your town in the subject line, or leave your name at the number 515-292-2878. Attention, county reporters. For today, we have a few announcements. On Saturday, March 30th at 2 p.m., the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center will be sponsoring a talk by Dick Steffen, historian, author, and teacher from Jewell, with a pretty impressive bio, which is on their website. The talk is Jewell Junction, a railroad town then and now. So to find out about your neighbors and some really pretty significant railroad history, go to the museum at Saturday, March 30th at 2 p.m. Also, the annual auction of the museum will be Sunday, April 7th at 1 p.m. This year's theme is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. For more information, call the museum 800-626-0319. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today, our program has been your county reporters, Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen, taking a road trip to the James H. Andrew Railroad Museum and History Center at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. We have been speaking with James H. Andrew and Mike Wendell, the director of the museum. You can find out more information at iowarailwaymuseum.org, iowarailwaymuseum.org. Be sure to click the Events and Exhibits tabs to learn about the great things coming up, or call 800-626-0319. Reporters who contributed to this show have been Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen, with suggestions from all the producers in the producers group at KHOI. Production assistance has been provided by Ursula Rudenberg and Deborah Bunka. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Music you heard today included Lonesome Train, the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad jingle, Steaming Toward Tomorrow, Riding the Rails, Ebenezer, The Sun's Gonna Shine in My Back Door Someday, and our theme song, Backtrackin', all by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you on the radio.
Shine in my back door someday.